This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of occupational health from the basic science section on orthobullets.com. This episode will be a little bit of a grab bag of subtopics, including radiation exposure and fluoroscopy, risk of transmission, as well as resident surgeon work duty hours. And of course, we'll end the episode with some practice questions. So starting with radiation exposure and fluoroscopy, factors which increase radiation exposure levels during use of fluoroscopy, including imaging large body parts, positioning the extremity closer to the X-ray source, and the use of a large C-arm rather than a mini C-arm, as radiation exposure is minimal during use of mini C-arm fluoroscopy unless the surgical team is in the direct path of the radiation beam. Factors to decrease radiation exposure to the patient and the surgeon include maximizing the distance between the surgeon and the radiation beam, minimizing exposure time, manipulating the X-ray beam with collimation, orienting the fluoroscopic beam in an inverted position relative to the patient, strategic positioning of the surgeon within the operative field to avoid the direct path of the beam, and use of protective shielding during imaging. Moving on to risk of transmission, we'll talk about risk of HIV transmission, risk of hepatitis B transmission, and risk of hepatitis C transmission. So as far as risk of HIV transmission, the different modes of potential transmission of HIV can be from a needle stick, frozen bone allograft, and blood transfusion. So with respect to a needle stick, seroconversion to HIV from a contaminated needle stick is approximately 0.3%. Again, seroconversion to HIV from a contaminated needle stick is approximately 0.3%. And of course, exposure to large quantities of blood increases the risk. Seroconversion from exposure to HIV-contaminated mucous membranes is approximately 0.09%. As far as frozen bone allograft, the risk of transmission is less than 1 per million. Keep in mind that donor screening is the most important factor in prevention, and there have been no reported cases of transmission from frozen bone allograft since 2001. The risk of transmission of HIV from blood transfusion is 1 in 500,000 per unit transfused. Seronegative blood may still transmit the virus due to delay between HIV infection and antibody development. Moving on to risk of hepatitis B transmission, 37 to 62% eventually seroconvert following a needle stick. 22 to 31% develop clinical hepatitis B infection following a needle stick. Moving on to risk of hepatitis C transmission, there is a 0.5 to 1.8% risk of transmission after a needle stick. Finally, let's talk about resident surgeon work duty hours. The ACGME has restricted work hours in order to address impaired performance by residents caused by long duty hours. So as far as duty hours, this includes clinical time, academic hours, administrative work, and time on call. So with respect to time on call, this should be no more than one day per every 3 days in-house and must include a 10-hour period of quote-unquote off time between clinics and on call. Duty hours are also restricted to 80 or less hours per week, averaged over a 4-week period. A 10% increase is allowed if justified by educational value, and one day in 7 must be an off day, averaged over a 4-week period. As far as results of the new duty hours, early evaluations have caused concern over issues of patient safety and continuity of care. Communication and transfers in care have been cited as sources of decreased continuity of care as a sequelae of the 80-hour resident physician work week. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a colleague is struggling to obtain a perfect lateral radiograph for distal locking screw placement. Other than good technique, how might the surgeon best reduce the amount of radiation exposure to the patient and personnel when using fluoroscopy? And the choices are 1, the use of continuous fluoroscopy while manipulating the leg, 2, standing directly behind the cathode ray tube, 3, advising the technician to position the fluoroscopy beam on command, 4, placement of the image intensifier receptor as close to the patient as possible, and 5, placement of the cathode ray tube as close to the patient as possible. The correct answer to this question is 4, placement of the image intensifier receptor as close to the patient as possible. so placing the image intensifier as close as clinically possible to the patient, scatter radiation exposure to the personnel is minimized. Numerous steps have been described to decrease radiation in the operating room. They include 1, decreased time of exposure, 2, decreased dose of exposure, 3, beam collimation, 4, the use of mini C-arm, 5, inverting the C-arm, which shortens the distance between the body part and collection surface, 6, surgeon's control of the C-arm, 7, use of protective equipment like glasses, thyroid shields, and aprons, and 8, increase the distance from the X-ray source. Maniscalco et al. Compared the amount of radiation exposure during open lumbar microdiscectomy and minimally invasive microdiscectomy. Minimally invasive lumbar microdiscectomy cases exposed the surgeon to significantly more radiation than open microdiscectomy. Interestingly, standing in a substerile room during X-ray localization in open cases is not fully protective. Moving on to the next question. Which of the following actions increases radiation exposure to patients and personnel when using fluoroscopy? And the choices are 1, the use of lead glasses, thyroid shield, and a lead apron with an equivalent lead thickness of 0.25 millimeters, 2, orienting the cathode ray tube beneath the patient with the image intensifier receptor as close to the patient as possible, 3, limiting the beam on time to only what is clinically important, 4, the use of continuous fluoroscopy to ensure proper placement of implants, and 5, orienting the beam in the opposite direction of the working team and keeping the team outside a 6-foot radius from the fluoroscopy machine. The correct answer to this question is 4, the use of continuous fluoroscopy to ensure proper placement of implants. So continuous fluoroscopy and cineradiography exposes the patient and personnel to markedly increased levels of direct and scatter radiation exposure. Continuous fluoroscopy should be limited to only what is absolutely needed for safe completion of the procedure. By orienting the cathode ray tube beneath the patient and placing the image intensifier as close as clinically possible to the patient, scatter radiation exposure to the personnel is minimized. Moving on to the next question. Which of the following configurations creates the least radiation exposure for the operative surgeon during upper extremity surgery? And the choices are 1, imaging the thumb positioned against the X-ray source with the standard C-arm, 2, imaging the wrist positioned against the X-ray source with the standard C-arm, 3, imaging the thumb positioned against the image intensifier with the mini C-arm, 4, imaging the wrist positioned against the image intensifier with the mini C-arm, and 5, imaging the thumb positioned against the X-ray source with the mini C-arm. The correct answer to this question is 3, imaging the thumb positioned against the image intensifier with the mini C-arm. So radiation exposure with fluoroscopy is reduced by using the mini C-arm, imaging a smaller body part, and moving the body part away from the X-ray source that is near the image intensifier. Giordano et al. Evaluated radiation exposure to the surgeon and patient with both the standard fluoroscopy unit and mini C-arm in different configurations for different body parts. Greater radiation exposure was associated with use of the standard fluoro unit, larger body parts, and moving the body part closer to the X-ray source, that is, away from the image intensifier. Atwal et al. Used radiation dosimeters to evaluate radiation exposure to the surgical team during cadaver wrist surgery with the standard C-arm and a mini C-arm. Radiation exposure was significantly greater with the use of the standard C-arm. Moving on to the next question. When using C-arm fluoroscopy, patient radiation exposure will be increased with which of the following? And the choices are 1, the extremity is positioned closer to the image intensifier, 2, a larger body part is imaged compared to a smaller body part, 3, use of radiation beam collimation, 4, mini C-arm fluoroscopy is used instead of large C-arm fluoroscopy, and 5, decreased duration of imaging. The correct answer to this question is 2, a larger body part is imaged compared to a smaller body part. So patient radiation exposure will be increased if a larger body part is imaged compared to a smaller body part. And to quickly review, the first study by Giordano et al. Used radiation dosimeters for large and mini C-arm machines, and they found that elevated exposure levels can be expected when larger body parts are imaged, when the extremity is positioned closer to the X-ray source, and when the large C-arm is used over the mini C-arm. The second study by Giordano et al. also used dosimeters for a mini C-arm and found that the surgical team is exposed to minimal radiation during routine use of mini C-arm fluoroscopy, except when they are in the direct path of the radiation beam. They list factors to decrease radiation exposure to the patient and the surgeon, including minimizing exposure time, reducing exposure factors, manipulating the X-ray beam with collimation, orienting the fluoroscopic beam in an inverted position relative to the patient, strategic positioning of the surgeon within the operative field, judicious use of protective shielding during imaging, and maximizing the distance of the surgeon from the radiation beam. Moving on to the next question. All of the following are cited as a concern for decreased continuity of care when signing out patient care from one provider to another, except, and the choices are 1, omitting the patient's current clinical condition, 2, omitting guidance for events likely to occur on the next shift, 3, signing out to physician extenders instead of a resident physician, 4, rationale not given for plans provided to the covering physician, and 5, tasks not assigned to the covering physician for completion. The correct answer to this question is 3, signing out to physician extenders instead of a resident physician. So signing out to physician extenders instead of a resident physician is not cited as a source of decreased continuity of patient care. Communication and transfers in care have been cited as sources of decreased continuity of care as a sequelae of the 80-hour resident physician work week implemented by the ACGME. Friedlander conducted a survey of orthopedic surgery residents and found that though residents are personally happier, they were concerned about the possible loss of continuity of care. An editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine by Oki discusses the delicate balance between optimal patient care and national limits on resident duty hours. The cohort study by Horwitz et al. Analyzed 503 patient signouts and found a 5% rate of communication inadequacies, including omitting key information about recent or scheduled events, tasks to complete, and rationale for assigned tasks. And moving on to the final question. An orthopedic surgeon is closing a total knee replacement incision of a patient with HIV and accidentally sustains a needle stick. What is the surgeon's approximate risk of contracting the virus? And the choices are 1, 0.3%, 2, 3%, 3, 10%, 4, 20%, and 5, 30%. The correct answer to this question is 1.3%. So the average risk of transmission of human immunodeficiency virus or HIV to a healthcare worker after percutaneous exposure to HIV-infected blood has been estimated as 0.3%. Cardo et al. Found the risk of HIV infection increases with a larger volume of blood and a higher titer of HIV in the source patient's blood. Post-exposure prophylaxis with NRTIs or nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitors appears to be protective. That's all for this review about occupational health. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you've gotten any value from the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.